Thank you.
That's good. Yes, that'll be there. So sadhu means well done. well said, one well done. So that's very good.
Rejoice.
Yes, rejoice. It's a nice thing. We always say after something we've done something good, you know, especially something like the Metta Sutta, this loving kindness teaching from the Buddha, which is something I think the world needs more of now. I think. And I always say the place to develop it, of course, is with ourselves. You know, to me, people are often talking about world peace and how much the world is in turmoil now, isn't it? But I always say to people, where do you start with world peace?
With yourself.
This is where the big contribution is, actually. And in Buddhism, of course, the first step of doing that is actually what we call keeping precepts. And these are ethical rules of how ethical... They're like rules, but we take them upon ourselves voluntarily. And they are guidelines, really. The Buddha actually calls them training rules. You know, so they're for training us. We don't have to be perfect at it. And the fact that they are voluntary, they're not imposed by the Buddha or anybody else. We take them on ourselves when we see the value of them. So this is a very important part of Buddhism. Maybe we'll talk about that in the second part because we're talking about meditation now. But the main point of that is that that is a big contribution to world peace. The way we act and speak individually is the first step towards world peace, because we have peace then in the family, we have peace in the community, and then it spreads out. So this is actually a very practical practice, very practical way of developing peace in the world. Not these agreements that are signed between countries, that's all very well, but the real peace is when we develop peace in ourselves. And this evening, this is the other aspect of developing peace in the world, is to develop the peace of meditation, to develop the wisdom of meditation. And that's what we're here for this evening. Because meditation is aimed at calming the mind down. And when the mind calms down, then we can see clearly. Then we can see what's happening within us. This is our main focus, to see what's going on within our world. And then we can take that out to the world, that peace that we have, that understanding that we have. So this is a very important part of meditation. I always say meditation, when we meditate formally, like sitting on the cushion or sitting on the chair, whatever, however we're meditating, is a preparation. It's like a training ground. It's like the practice. You often say, you know, for sports, we talk about practice, and for football and cricket, most of the time it's practice, isn't it? The actual matches, very few. And our formal meditation, we sit on cushions and we do walking meditation or any other form of meditation, this is practice. And we experience the results when we're sitting, when we're walking, but we take that into our daily life too. And that is very important, actually, because we are actually, what we're doing is reconditioning the mind. We're giving the mind, we're changing some of the patterns, some of the habits we've developed. This is not easy. We've been working on it for a long time.
Can I ask something?
Yes, you can.
Please. You mentioned the peace and the things that are going on around the world.
Yes.
It might be correct term to say I've been polluting my mind muchly with the Syria conflict.
Yeah, people can get very much into this,
and
yes.
I've been getting, watching Russian media as opposed to Western media, that actually gives a little clarity.
Yeah.
But the volume of disturbance from it is polluting my mind. And what I'm wondering with what you said just then, because it's over there, I bring it into myself. That would suggest then that I'm actually even a carrier of this pollution, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Mm. I think probably we can have these questions afterwards, but I'll just answer that. That is something I'm concerned with too. And I say to people, when they watch the news on TV, see it on the internet, wherever they see it, read it in the newspapers, they still read newspapers, see what the reaction is, see what the result of that is. If you're finding you're getting depressed, if you're finding you're getting angry, ask yourself, is this worthwhile? Do I need to do this? Because if you're getting anger, if you're getting depressed, is taking the mind in a negative direction. If, on the other hand, you read the news, you see it on TV and so on, and you feel a lot of compassion, you feel like the suffering of these people is so, it touches you, then that is a wholesome thing. And then maybe you think, what can you do? That is wholesome. Oftentimes, as I say, people get, either they get depressed, feel helpless, and or they get angry. And all of those reactions, not useful actually. For them, they have to live with the results in their own mind, and then how it will translate into action, body and speech, maybe not good too, actually. So I always say, we have to choose, you know, what we put into our minds. We can choose. We don't have to take everything in. And always the method that I advise is to check up how you react to it. You know, if you're reacting in a negative way, then you can think, do I want to do this? Do I want to continue feeding on this information? Is it of a benefit to me? Is it of a benefit to anybody else? If I get angry and depressed, probably not. But this actually ties in with the simile I was going to use for meditation, for the new people too, that the mind is like a garden. And in the garden, there's some very beneficial, useful plants, beautiful plants, but there are also weeds and harmful plants. So some of the, and of course some of the, this translates into the good qualities of the mind, the positive qualities of the mind, and the negative qualities. So, for instance, depression, anger, anxiety, these are like weeds in the garden. And good qualities like generosity, kindness, compassion, these are good qualities in the mind. These are qualities that are positive, that are useful to develop. But, I always say to people, we have the choice what we cultivate in our garden. We can cultivate the beneficial plants, the beautiful plants, or we can cultivate the harmful plants, the weeds in the garden. And this is what I would say, in many cases, people are actually cultivating the weeds. When they get angry and depressed, when they read the news, it's the weeds. But the trouble is, because we think we're right, we have this feeling of righteousness, you use this word quite often, we feel we're right, then it empowers this negative states of mind all the more. But these are still negative. It doesn't change that fact. So we have the power to cultivate whatever we wish in our minds. Generally speaking, most people have a sort of a passive approach to their minds, and they think, well, you know, I just feel depressed, it just came, you know, or I feel really good, you know, I feel quite excited, I feel stimulated, and it's like it's just popped up out of nowhere. But of course in Buddhism we say everything comes from a cause, everything comes up because of a condition and then arises. The big problem with our minds is we're so used to being out in the world that we don't know our own minds. And if I say to you, do you know, what's the mind? And I'm sure, like most people, well, what do you think the mind is? Anybody got any answers? It's always an interesting question.
An organ in your head.
Ah, that's the brain. That's the brain. Organ in your head, that's quite good.
The monkey mind.
The monkey mind, yeah. Yeah, so mostly we're not familiar with our minds. We're familiar with the world of the senses, what we see, hear, smell, taste and touch, but we're not familiar with the actual thing that's actually receiving all this information and knowing it. This is a big quality. This is what the mind is that aspect of the human beings that knows what's happening. And we'd say in Buddhism, it functions through the brain. That's how it operates, through the brain, the physical organ. So this is, we can cultivate in our minds whatever we wish. And I think because you're here this evening, I think you're looking towards the beneficial and beautiful plants. You're looking towards cultivating those things that are positive. And that's a good idea, I think, because there's many negative influences in our lives. And it's good to, it's an opportunity to see what the results are. I always say this is what Buddhism is about. You try something and you see the results. As I mentioned, with the newspapers, with the television, the internet, see the results, and whether they're positive or negative. And then you make the choice. Do I want to cultivate this? Do I want to cultivate more negativity, more weeds, more harmful plants? Or do I want to cultivate positive states of mind, the beneficial and the beneficial and beautiful plants in my mind? We have the choice. So this is something that we can all make the choice. The Buddha, he actually pointed to the fact that he categorized these weeds in the mind in an interesting way. He called them the five hindrances. And these are hindrances to the meditation, but they're also, not surprisingly really, hindrances to our lives. The things that occur when we're sitting on the cushion or sitting on a chair meditating are the things that occur in everyday life. So when we learn to deal with these five hindrances, which I'll mention in a moment, we're actually learning something that's useful in our lives as well. We can take it out into the world. We can take it when we get up from the cushion or the chair, we can use it. And those five hindrances are, first of all, one is desire, sensual desire particularly, and the second one is anger, ill will, irritation, annoyance, also covers fear. And the next one, is sleepiness and drowsiness. So this is the dullness of the mind and also the dullness that the body can experience too. And the next one is restlessness. I think people are familiar with that. And worry. And the last one is doubt. You might think there are a lot of other negative emotions that are not covered in that, but they're sort of umbrella terms. So the other ones, for instance, like envy, jealousy, would probably come under ill will, because a negative, aversive state of mind, a resisting state of mind. And so there are other emotions that you can probably think of that would fall under these categories. But they're all, the Buddha is talking about all these negative qualities. And the reason he talks about it is because they block meditation. They make the meditation very difficult. They block, he says, they weaken wisdom too. So in other words, if they not only stop us from becoming peaceful and calm, they also stop us from developing wisdom. So these five hindrances are the main thing that we need to address in a meditation before we start, actually. And really, the whole of the meditation practice is aimed at getting to know our minds and getting to know the negative states, the positive states, encouraging the positive states and discouraging, reducing the negative states. And this is the whole of the practice, really, and particularly important in meditation. So for dealing with these five hindrances, there is many different antidotes you can use. And any positive state of mind can actually reduce them. So it's very important at the beginning of a meditation, for the newcomers particularly, to develop a positive state of mind. And you can do this. This evening we'll do using gratitude, the emotion of gratitude. You can use that. But you can use other emotions, other positive emotions like loving kindness. You know, we just chanted what we just chanted is about loving kindness. And you can use things like generosity, thinking of generosity, any form of kindness, compassion. You can use contentment, things like that are very, very useful. And when we have these positive emotions, it deals with all of these five hindrances very well. It reduces some of them and completely takes some of them out of the picture. So this evening, for instance, with gratitude, you know, that will reduce. Gratitude is, of course, what is gratitude? Do people know what gratitude is? Any ideas?
Being thankful for.
Yes, being thankful. That's it. Being appreciative, being thankful, that's gratitude, gratefulness. I often think too, you know, just the feeling of being blessed, of feeling, you know, you're very lucky, fortunate, you might say. I think people would say lucky, actually, very fortunate. That idea actually is the essence of gratitude, and it works against a lot of the negativity very, very well, because a lot of the, for instance, the desire in our lives is that we don't feel we've got enough. We've got to get more. We don't think about the fact, I've got enough. I've got enough to live. That idea is not very common, actually, these days. People always have more of a shopping list of what's missing, what they need, and not much of an appreciation, do we, of what we already have, and which is pretty good, usually. It's usually enough, actually, really. So gratitude works against this this strong desire, which comes up in the meditation too, because most of our concerns will be about the world of the sense of things we've seen, heard, smelled, tasted and touched. So, you know, you may in meditation start thinking about politics, football, anything that's from the outside world can come up, or food, or we may feel hungry, looking forward to cup of tea, whatever it is, or we may feel uncomfortable in the body, you know, if we feel like we've got to, you know, sort of move to make ourselves comfortable and so on. So this gratitude overcomes that in a big way, thankfulness overcomes that. And of course, if we're thankful, there's not much room for anger and irritation either, because it's such a positive emotion, it displaces that quite well. Loving kindness is the real antidote for that, and this real kindness, real softness that overcomes that. And of course, if you've got gratitude, thankfulness in your mind, you're not going to be so sleepy either and drowsy, so that's good. And with restlessness, gratitude is focusing on what you have, so it's moving away from the idea of always looking for something to make me happy, you know, think about something else, or, you know, think about tomorrow, or what's going to happen. So with restlessness, it reduces it too, and with worry, it does as well, because the mind is quite peaceful, quite still. So it's very useful for that as well. And of course, the last one, doubt. With thankfulness, that makes, there's not so much doubt, actually. You can have doubt. Sometimes people, and I've had it, they go through the meditation, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? You know, and especially more complicated meditations. You know, I remember they have these sweeping meditations where you go through the body from the top of the head to the toes and then back up. And I was always, I mean, I did it. I thought, oh, am I doing it in the right order? And all this sort of thing. And that actually derails the meditation, because you're actually, you know, you're doubting, you're worrying about whether you're doing it the right way. So these things are usually, if you get a good positive emotion, contentment, gratitude, loving kindness, it can settle those very well. And then you're ready to go into the meditation after that. I call this actually like priming the meditation. You know, I don't know if many of you have seen pumps, water pumps. In order to get them going, you need to pour water in, and then you start the motor up, and then it starts drawing the water, starts sucking the water. This is the same idea, that if you prime the meditation, then the mind is ready. It's in a good condition to meditate. And it's a very pleasant state. This is the other benefit. And I say to people, if you learn, you know, how to develop positive states of mind for your meditation, you can do it in daily life too. You can use the same approaches in daily life. So it's actually very useful for the whole of our lives. And then we're not victims of our emotions so much. We can actually, as it were, deal with them in a positive way, you know, in a positive way. Because, of course, once we understand the causes for particular mind states coming up, particular emotions coming up, then we have an idea of how other causes can be put in place that will, as it were, reduce them and maybe replace them. And that's what we're doing this evening with priming the meditation. So generally with the meditation, I'd like to start, I'll just give you the sort of bare bones, as it were, of the approach. Start with the intention. I like always to have an idea of why I'm meditating, just so the mind's not flopping all over the place, you know, because if you come home from work tired or whatever, and then you just sit down on the cushion, I'm meditating, and before you know it, you'll be drowsy and, you know, sleeping. That's not bad, because you probably need it. But if you have a little bit of an intention in mind, I'm meditating, may my mind be, you know, in the present moment, may my mind be grateful, may it be thankful, something like that. Just something to give it a bit of, you know, a bit of structure, so it's not flopping about. That's very useful. At the same time, we have to not make it an agenda. You know, it's not a demand. It's not an expectation. It's got to be like this, because that doesn't work either. That's a big hindrance to meditation, if we expect or demand things to be in a particular way. So that's very useful with the intention. Gives just a bit of a ground plan. I like it. Ajahn Brahm used to call it programming the mind. Programming the mind. These days he's not doing much programming. He usually says, don't do anything. And then people look blank and they think, what? How do you do that? They do ask, actually, how do you do that? You know, so that's that can be a bit perplexing. So a little bit of a plan is good, as long as you just have that in mind and then you put it aside. The mind will remember it. We don't have to keep bringing it up. And then, of course, after that, it's very good to go to the body and relax the body very thoroughly, because this in itself is a meditation technique some people use. If you relax the body very, very well, you get this, they call it the relaxation response. And the feeling of it, if it works very well, is that the mind is sinking. It's sinking into itself, not into the body, I don't think, sinking into itself. So it's actually relaxing with the body. Because for most of us, the body and the mind are very, very connected. And only as we develop, the meditation develops, our wisdom develops, are we more independent of the body. So no matter what the body is like, our minds can still be good. And this is one of the teachings that the Buddha gave to an old person at the time of the Buddha. He said, even though your body may be sick, may your mind be well, may your mind be happy, you know. So this is possible. But for most of us, it's still very much, if the body is not good, then the mind is not very happy. So very important to relax the body, and that's very good. That's an important part of the meditation. And then I usually move into the present moment to make sure we're in the present moment. When we're going through the body, we are in the present moment. This body is here and now, actually, but we can drift off. But then to come into the present moment, let go of the past, what we've been concerned with is very important. We can pick it up later. And same with the future, because we're often planning, we're well ahead of today, we're well ahead of this hour, we're, you know, into the future, tomorrow, next week, all that. So we can just put that aside. And I often say it's a bit like turning the mobile phone of the past off and the mobile phone of the future off, just for the time of the meditation. And then it comes back on afterwards, so people need not worry. And then after that, one can go from the present moment, we can go into different meditation objects. This evening we'll go into the breath, we'll use the breath, and probably to take 3 deep breaths. Deep breaths are very useful because they clear the mind, actually. And 3 is usually not too bad for people. I once had I was teaching one time 6, and one of the people said, I feel a bit lightheaded when I do 6. I said, well, do less. But you'll notice the immediate effect is the thinking reduces, because this is what most meditators, they struggle with, actually, is thinking. And they shouldn't. It's very natural. Don't resist it. It's there. Just don't get involved in it, but be very kind about it. And if we add negativity to, you know, if we're trying to get rid of our thinking, if we are resisting it, if we are opposing it, we're adding negativity to the situation. But if we're just kind, if we're just wise, we think, that's what I do all day, I think. So I sit down on the cushion, what happens? I think. So then, it can reduce by itself. We're not adding any extra energy, as it were, to the thinking. And usually with thinking, when it occurs in meditation, what's good, if possible, is just to note that, just to recognize it, you don't have to note actually, that it's thinking is happening. If you pay too much attention to the story before you know it, you're into the story and then, you know, you're going along with it. Yes, I must do this tomorrow. Yeah, that's right, you know, and so on. You get carried away. So if you can just bring to mind, thinking is happening, that can sometimes be enough for it to lose its power, because it's our interest that makes it grow. It comes up, seems to come up from our conditioning. I liken it to, I don't know if you know this predictive software they use for, when you're typing for emails, and they use it for advertising too. Uncanny sometimes, incredible. I've been typing away, and it's just predicting exactly the word that I was about to use, you know. It's so what it points to is we're very conditioned, actually. And so what's coming up is like this predictive software stuff. It's all coming up, and then we pay attention to it, and then we're into it, you know, and then we're putting the magnifying glass on it, and it really gets much, much bigger and more interesting and grows, or more whatever, you know, interesting. Sometimes it's not pleasant, you know, so it can be unpleasant. So that's an important point to mention. Then we would go to the breath and just stay with the breath. This evening I'll use a mantra with the breath, and in keeping with a theme of gratitude, it will be thanks. Thanks on the in-breath, thanks on the out-breath. This feeling of being thankful. You know, in the end, you can just create your own words. It's nothing special, is there? The thing with the word thanks, whatever word you find, as long as it's got that feeling of gratitude, you know, and that will keep that feeling going. And a very important thing for the meditation is, if your meditation object, be it the breath, or even your feet if you're walking, or whatever, has this really positive emotion with it, like we're talking about gratitude or thankfulness, it gives it a warmth and gives it a pleasantness that the mind likes, and then the mind will stay with it, actually. It makes it much more attractive. So this is a very useful thing to do with the meditation, just to combine it. So it's got that quality. You can have loving kindness with it. You can flavour it with any positive emotion that really just lifts the mind and allows the, you know, the weeds to reduce. The aim of meditation, of course, is to cut down the weeds. It does cut down the weeds, but it's temporary. The weeds still have their roots. And we say in Buddhism, the roots only go when a person becomes enlightened. Then the roots are dug up. They often say that, actually, dug up. And then those negative qualities can't arise in an enlightened person's mind, fully enlightened. So that's down the path, down the road. But it's not, it's in the reach of everyone. This is the idea of the Buddha. He's encouraging us to go that way. And of course, the more we reduce the negative qualities in our minds, the happier we are. This is actually the whole point of it. And I always say the Buddha's path is one of happiness, greater and greater happiness. And in fact, that's the path the Buddha trod after he started out trying all the difficult practices and then realized this is not the way. And then he was practicing more and more happiness as the path developed. So he had the happiness of his meditation, he had the happiness of developing insight, he had the happiness of enlightenment, and then he had the happiness of, we say, Nibbana, or Nirvana they call, when he's finished with all this, with all being born. So these are all greater steps in happiness. So Buddha's path is not about depression and suffering. It addresses those, but its actual aim is happiness and well-being of everyone, you know. Otherwise, why? Who would bother? If it wasn't leading to happiness and some form of satisfaction, contentment, fulfillment, then what would be the purpose? What would be the... why would we do it? Yes. So, we've talked enough about it. Let's do it. I think that's enough. Oh, actually, I should first of all ask questions. If there are any questions. And if you have questions afterwards, is fine, so... So, first of all, we find a posture that's comfortable for us. And we can close our eyes. It's good to adjust the body until you find, you know, just what's just right for you. Move the shoulders or the legs. Because we often have a lot of strain in the shoulders. Tension. And so we can begin by checking out our intention. Maybe this evening we can think, may my mind develop gratitude for all that I've received. Or something similar. May my mind stay in the present moment, be in the present moment, enjoy the present moment. And we remember this is just a suggestion, a serving suggestion, not a demand, not an expectation. And now we can bring to mind someone or some situation we feel a lot of thanks for, a lot of gratitude for. Maybe it's a person that's affected your life, made a huge difference to your life. Maybe a teacher, a spiritual teacher, maybe a parent, grandparent, friend, whoever. Someone that we feel a lot of thanks for their contribution to our lives. Or a situation that we're very thankful for, that's really good in our lives, that's been very beneficial in our lives. Something that brings gratitude up very easily, that feeling of warmth, of thanks. And we can bring this sense of gratitude here to have thanks, to have gratitude for the fact that we can meditate together, that we have this opportunity, that not many people have this opportunity this evening to meditate in a group, which is very supportive. What an opportunity we have. Special, special. And so we can feel this feeling of thanks to have an opportunity like this. Now we can move the attention to the body, starting at the top of the head, with this warm feeling of thanks, of appreciation towards the body, starting with the top of the head and all around the back of the head and the side of the head, just noticing what we're experiencing with this warm, thankful attention. And then we move the attention to the forehead, around the eyes, the cheeks, around the mouth, and the chin. This warm, grateful attention, noticing what's there, and just being thankful that we have a body that works reasonably well, that allows us to do what we can do, all the things we can do, allows us to meditate tonight. So we know what's happening and we have this warm attention of gratitude. And we can notice the saliva in our mouths. And then move the attention to the neck, all around the neck, noticing what's happening. Just giving it some attention, some appreciation, which we hardly ever do. And then we move the attention to the right shoulder, all along the shoulder, allowing it to relax, to let go of the burdens that it carries, stress, strain. Just being grateful for this body that allows us to do what we need to. Now we move the attention down the right arm, the upper arm, all around the upper arm, down to the elbow, and down the lower arm to the right wrist. Just noticing what there is, and bringing this warm attention, relaxing attention, appreciative attention. Then we move the attention to the palm of the hand, the underneath of the hand, the top of the hand, with this warm attention, noticing what's happening in the hand, any discomfort, any sensations, feelings, and bringing this warmth to it, of thankfulness, of kindness. And then we move the attention up the fingers of the right hand to the tips of the fingers. And we make a mind movement, just with the mind, out into the room, to let go of any stress, strain, whether it be physical or emotional, just to let it go. And then we bring the attention to the left shoulder. This warm attention, kind attention, allowing it to relax, put down the burden for a time. And then moving the attention down the left upper arm, all around the upper arm, down to the elbow, all around the elbow, and then down the lower arm, all around the lower arm, to the wrist of the left arm. Being aware of what's going on and giving this warm attention of thanks, of kindness, to the left arm. Then we move the attention to the palm of the left hand and the top of the left hand, bringing it to mind, noticing what is happening, the feeling, sensations. With this warm attention. And now we move the attention up the fingers of the left hand to the tips of the fingers, noticing what's happening in the fingers, tingling, whatever sensations there may be, warmth, dampness. And then from the tips of the fingers, we make a mind movement into the room, letting go of any physical tension, mental tension, whatever it is, allowing it to flow out, as it were. Now we bring our attention to the back, just below the shoulders, and we move the attention slowly down the back with this warm attention of thankfulness, noticing what's happening, what sensations, what feelings are there, and allowing them to relax, to become more comfortable, to come to ease. Moving down towards the waist and then going down lower. To the buttocks and then to the back of the legs. Noticing what's happening and having this warm, relaxing, kind, grateful attention. And now we move the attention to the front of the body, just below the shoulders, and we move down the chest, down the front of the body, noticing any feeling, sensations, movement from breathing, contact with the clothes. And we have a warm, kind, grateful attention to the body, appreciating. And we move down the chest towards the waist, and then to the abdomen, feeling any tension, any tightness, allowing it to relax with this warm attention. Now we move the attention to the right upper leg, and slowly we can move down the thigh all around to the right knee, all around the right knee, and then down the lower right leg to the ankle. Noticing the feelings, maybe discomfort or pain or whatever, heat, coolness, and giving this warm attention, thankful attention to the right leg. Now we bring the attention to the foot, to the sole of the foot, the underneath, and the top of the foot, bringing them into our minds, knowing what is happening in the foot, the right foot. Relaxing. Letting go of any strain, tension. And then we move the attention up the toes of the right foot to the tips of the toes. And we make a mind movement into the room, letting go of any of the dark energy, any of the tiredness, pain, discomfort, whatever, be it of the body or the mind. Bring the attention to the left leg, to the upper part of the left leg, the thigh, and move the attention down all around the thigh of the left leg, noticing what's happening, what we're experiencing, with kindness, with gratitude, moving the attention down the knee, all around the knee, noticing the knee, giving it full attention. And then moving the attention down the left lower leg, the calf, all around the lower leg to the ankle. And then we pay attention to the left foot, the top of the left foot, and the underneath of the left foot, the sole. With this warm attention, kind, grateful attention. And then we can move the attention to the toes, the base of the toes, and move up the toes to the tips of the toes. And then we can make a mind movement out into the room to let go of any tension, strain, whatever, through the tips of the left toe, the toes of the left foot. Now we bring the whole body to mind with this feeling of thankfulness, appreciation for what it allows us to do. Even despite its problems of ill health, whatever. Just aware of the whole body sitting here now. We can just be aware of sitting in the present moment and letting go of the past and the future. We can take care of those. We can pick those up again. When we leave the meditation for the moment, we can just turn them off for the while. Just to be here in the present moment, sitting, simply sitting. No complications. Nowhere we have to go. Nothing we have to do for the time being. Just to enjoy here and now. Present moment, whatever is happening. Sounds, feelings in the body, feelings of the temperature, ticking of the clock, whatever we're aware of. Perhaps the movement of the chest or the abdomen. Anything that's in the present moment. And we can be very grateful for the present moment, thankful. We don't have lots to do. We don't have to go anywhere for the moment. Just to enjoy being here now. And now we can take three deep breaths, just slowly, quietly, calmly, breathing in deeply, breathing out deeply, three times, in our own time. And as we breathe in, we can breathe in with thanks, the word thanks in our mind. And we can breathe, when we breathe out, we can have thanks in our mind again. Breathing in thanks, breathing out thanks. Over and over again. Breathing in this sense of thankfulness, gratitude, appreciation, and breathing it out to the world. This feeling of warmth, of thankfulness with the breath. thinking comes up, we can just say thanks to the thinking and come back to the breath very, very gently. And now we're coming close to the end of the meditation, so we can just check out how we feel now. Do we feel differently? Do we feel more peaceful or grateful? What do we feel now? And what's caused that? What's brought it up for us? And now we can share this energy of the meditation with all the people here, all the beings here, all our family and friends, and with beings everywhere for their happiness. And may they experience the happiness of gratitude, of thankfulness, of appreciation. Can make an aspiration. May I develop more and more gratitude, appreciation, thankfulness for the people and the things in my life, for my own happiness and for the happiness of others. Come out of meditation, open the eyes slowly, and move the body to make yourselves more comfortable. So, this is the time that I say, if you've got any comments, questions, or complaints, you're welcome to make them now. I've had complaints.
No. Sloth and torpor.
Yes.
Sloth and torpor. Relaxation. Fine line.
Yes.
And sleep.
Sleep, yes. Yes. Sloth and torpor. What's the difference between sloth and torpor and relaxation? With relaxation, we're still aware. We know the body is relaxed. With sloth and torpor, we're really in there. We're not aware, actually. There are all these states that affect our awareness, don't they? You know, so sloth and torpor, it's when the body becomes very heavy and the mind gets very sleepy too, and then the awareness is very foggy, it's very hazy for us. But with relaxation, the ideal is to relax and be aware. To be quite aware that the body is comfortable, the mind's comfortable with it too. So that'd be the difference. The problem with sloth and torpor or sleepiness and drowsiness is that, you know, everyone lives pretty busy lives. So, you know, if you've been busy all day, you know, working or doing whatever you've been doing today, thinking takes up a lot of energy too, then you come to sit, say, in the evening, and if you notice that you're feeling very sleepy and drowsy, that's no surprise. You know, you've been you know, using a lot of energy all day, and that's a time to be kind, you know, with this drowsiness and sleepiness or sloth and torpor, just to be kind with it. And then when your awareness surfaces again, you know, just to be aware you're back again, you know, you're with the breathing or whatever, you know. So not to get into too much of a fight and not to bring negative states of mind to what we're experiencing is the whole secret of meditation. If we bring negative states of mind to, say, sloth and torpor, it's just like adding fuel to a fire, you know. It's making it doubly worse. We're criticizing ourselves for being tired and you know, not with a meditation object or whatever. You know, we can be disappointed. We'll say, this is not what meditation's about, you know, whatever we may think. So at those times to be, you know, kind to that feeling of tiredness, and use wisdom to realize it's quite reasonable that given what we've been doing, you know, one will feel tired. And you know, when Ajahn Brahm is giving these meditation retreats, he's always telling people for the first few days, you know, rest. They need it, actually. People need it for the first few days. They're very sleep. They have a lot more sleep and relax a lot more. And then the energy comes up. Then the brightness of mind can come up. So this is a very important thing, not to get into a fight, not to add negativity to the situation, and just to be kind and wait for the energy to return. This is very useful. Of course, you can do other things with a sloth and torpor, and the classic ones are, you know, if you wish to, you can do walking meditation. It's very hard to sleep during walking meditation. I have done it. I have done it myself, but it's quite difficult to do. So there are some things we can do. If we feel that we'd like to get a bit more physical energy going, then the mental energy flows with it. Sometimes just even putting more energy into the posture gives us more energy in the mind too, and then that sloth and torpor can dissipate. So it's very interesting to know that the one of the Buddha's chief disciples, Venerable Mahamoggallana, had a problem with sleepiness and drowsiness, sloth and torpor, and he gave him something like 16 different techniques to use, you know, to go outside and look at the moon and bright light. Light is very good. If you've got sloth and torpor or drowsiness, I always meditate. If I'm tired and I'm meditating, I leave the light on. I wouldn't turn it off, because as soon as you turn it off, it gives the cue to the body and the mind, time for sleep. So light is very useful, and in fact, you know, one of the antidotes is actually to bring up an internal light in the mind. If you do, you can do that, then you won't go to sleep, you won't have sloth and torpor. But there are many other methods that the Buddha suggested, you know, washing your face and pulling your earlobes even, that's quite interesting. So somebody actually has told me doing this is quite good, but while you're meditating, that's a bit distracting, isn't it? But to keep awake, quite interesting. So you probably find your own methods that you can use, which may not, you know, impact too much on the meditation, so you can continue it. But if it's really a lost cause and you feel like you really would like to stay awake, then walking is good. Otherwise, the Buddha said to Venerable Mahamoggallana, have a rest, and then then set the time for when you want to get up, have a rest and get up, and then continue the practice, in his case, you know. So there's some suggestions for sleepiness and drowsiness. So are there any other questions, or how did people find developing thankfulness, gratitude? Is it easy? I think it'd be quite hard most of the time, because we're not used to it, actually. We're used to the other side of the equation, you know, what I need, what I have to get, hardly ever thinking about what we already have, you know. Because gratitude leads to a sense of contentment, doesn't it? That as Ajahn Brahm says, this is one of my favourite sayings from him. He said it in one Wednesday night talk, and I think it's great for life, actually. Happiness is liking what you have. It's not having what you like. And most of us are waiting till we have what we like. And then happiness is always off in the future, isn't it? Till I get the next tab, next car, next TV, next child, whatever it is that we want, next partner, so on. So, you know, so happiness is liking what we have. That's gratitude, actually, just liking where we're at, you know, what we have, you know, what our physical qualities, our mental qualities, just being content with those. That's great, being grateful for those. So this is a very good recipe for happiness in life, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's one we don't notice that much, actually, because we're always focused on, you know, getting things. Getting and gaining is what we think will bring happiness. But actually just appreciating what we already have is really the secret of happiness, being, you know, content, being still with what we have, you know. So this is very useful for developing gratitude. So, yes. Yeah. of course, at Christmas time, they're trying to encourage everybody to buy more, get more, and so on. So they definitely don't want you to feel content and grateful. But this is good for our happiness, you know, not always chasing after what we think we lack, what we need. Because as soon as we feel we have to have something, isn't it? It's a lack. We're feeling like there's something missing in our lives, we have to get it, and then we'll be fulfilled. But the secret is, actually, we can be fulfilled by just appreciating what we already have. You know, and that's as Ajahn Brahm's always saying, good enough. Good enough. So, are there any other questions or comments that people would like to make? Yes?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could, you touched on it before, what the mind actually is.
Oh, right.
Could you clarify that? The way I understand it, it's the part of us that watches.
Yep, that's good.
Is that pretty much what it is?
I would say, and most people say, it's that quality of knowing or watching is a fairly good thing. It's what knows, what experiences the things coming from outside of us, and makes sense of them. And the mind, you know, is conditioned to like, dislike things. You can see the whole mental. It gives rise to. You know, if we like something, of course, it gives rise to desire. We want to get it. We may think we have to have it. If we don't like what we see, hear, smell, taste, or touch, we want to get rid of it. And we seesaw between these. And the mind is what is receiving all this, making sense of it. Because the body and the senses in and of themselves, they don't have that aspect. The eyes don't have this quality of liking what they see or disliking. It's the mind that adds that to it. So it's very interesting, you know, the mind seems, it is very intangible, it is, but it creates the world we live in, actually, doesn't it? So it always amazes me how, you know, you can take a group of people, and if you ask them how they perceive, how they experience just what they say, for instance, now, you'll probably get a different take on it altogether. Some, you know, totally bored, maybe some irritated, some angry, you know, that they think it's strange, or you can get all these different, and we're all in the same room experiencing the same thing, but yet the world we're living in are totally different, actually. So it's really the most important thing. This is what the Buddha was emphasizing, is the mind. You know, the body, of course, is like rented accommodation. We have it for as long as the body survives. You know, the conditions are good for it to keep running. Mm-hmm. We've got it, yeah. But the mind, in Buddhism we say, we moves on after it splits from the body, and it carries on. You know, the consciousness carries on. So really, the place to put the investment is in the mind, to understand the mind. And this is where our happiness, our unhappiness is coming from, actually. Not from this politician or that person or that colleague at work. It's coming from our minds. And so if we work with our minds, that's where we can find happiness. That's where we can put an end to the war, make peace. And this is actually where, I always liked, one of my teachers were talking about the treasure is actually in the mind already. We have everything we need in our mind. But we're not very used to it. We don't live in our minds that very much. We actually live out in the world. You know, we send our minds outwards all the time, hardly noticing where it's all coming from, in here, in the mind. And this is the most important quality in Buddhism. And when we meditate, we get to know it more and more. As mindfulness develops, we're more aware of what the mind is doing. And some parts of the Buddhist meditation, there's one called Chitta Vipassana, this is watching the mind. And this is actually getting to notice how the mind awareness is working itself. This is quite advanced. Instead of looking at the objects, you're aware of the quality of the mind that's engaging with the objects, be it sound, smell, taste, or touch, or even thoughts. This awareness. And this is a very advanced stage. So we get to know the mind more and more. And that's the whole purpose of the Buddha's teaching, is to know the mind more and more and purify it. Let go of the rubbish. empty the rubbish bin and develop good qualities more and more. And that with that, of course, we develop more happiness, because the things that give us grief are these five hindrances, the negative qualities, the weeds in the mind. And we can do something about them. Unfortunately, mostly people have the idea that they're just there, you know, they're just natural, they're part and parcel of experience. And the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha's message is, they're not. They're only visitors. But we've got so accustomed to them, we think they're permanent residents.
You mentioned knowing the mind.
Yes, knowing the mind can.
So something's got to be doing the knowing. So is that
the
distinction, might be correct to say that's the distinction between the spirit and the mind?
It's... we don't use that distinction in Buddhism, but we would say that there is a knowing part of the mind that can know what's going on in the rest of the mind.
Right.
Yeah, and that it's not a permanent quality. It's always changing and growing and declining sometimes as well. So it's not a, we wouldn't say it was a like a permanent thing or a permanent entity or a spirit. It's just a quality of the mind that it has, that it can know what's going on in the mind. It can know awareness itself.
The mind knows itself.
It knows itself, yeah. That's quite an interesting, quite an advanced stage to get to. So these are some of the things that, you know, are about the mind. And we usually know the mind by what it knows, but we're hardly aware of the awareness that is knowing those things, which is what I'm talking about at the moment. So, but this is very important, as I say. Put the investment in the mind, not in the body, because the body is the same for all of us. It has its use by date, and once it reaches that, not much to do. But the mind will move on, we say, will split from the body, and then continue. And all the good things we've developed in this life, they go with the mind. All the bad habits, they go with the mind. So we try and reduce the negative and increase the positive, so that the next life even better and better. And so this is the aim of Buddhism, to purify the mind and develop the mind more and more towards more happiness, towards more freedom, actually, too. This is an important quality in the Buddha's path, is freedom, actually. So, right. So I hope that answers the question. Yes, good. And good.